Netherlands, and closing today's exploration of morality and motivation. During the opening ceremony of the FENS meeting, I caught up with Joshua Brown. He's a computer scientist and engineer at Indiana University, America. He models what happens in our brains when we make a mistake and how we experience disappointment when we find ourselves in unexpected situations.
In general terms, we form expectations every day about the kinds of things that I think will happen based on what we know about the world. You know, for example, if you are meeting with someone, you might expect certain things will happen. And if they don't happen, you experience some kind of disappointment. Or likewise, if you are doing something and you make a mistake, you recognize that something's gone wrong because you first have an expectation about how things should work. And so what we've done is to take a lot of neuroscience data about this phenomena of forming expectations, then evaluating whether what happens is consistent with your expectations or whether there's a surprise. What we've developed a model of is how the particular regions of the brain, the anterior cingulate, so that's the part that's just directly above the middle of your eyes and back a few centimeters. And we built a model in a way that captures a lot of different cognitive neuroscience data, functional MRI, monkey neurophysiology, human electrophysiology, that is the voltages off the scalp. And we've developed a model that can account for all these different kinds of data. And so that's really the approach I've taken. Rather than trying to sort of work out a proper definition of what is prediction, what is risk, what does it mean to have that experience of, oops, something went wrong or something unexpected happens. Rather, what I've done is to simply look at the neural circuits and meet them on their own terms and ask, how do we get systems of interacting cells to produce the kinds of signals that we observe to be associated with forming predictions about what's going to happen and evaluating whether something unexpected happens. Where that's gotten us now is to a model, we have several models, one more recently, that accounts for a lot of the neuroscience data. And it turns out that the mechanisms that we've uncovered are surprisingly simple, at least conceptually, in that there are really two parts to the process. And the first is forming predictions, which in the simplest sense, the more strongly you predict a particular outcome, the more cell activity you have associated with that prediction. And then when it comes to detecting surprises, really all we had to do was to take the difference, that is the subtraction between the predictions that were represented and the actual outcomes. And so whenever you have a mismatch, then that difference is larger. And that larger difference constitutes this prediction error signal, or the surprise. So in a sense, what we found is that when we wade through all this complexity and all this large corpus of neuroscience data, we can organize a lot of it with surprisingly simple principles.
And there's certain human brain conditions, like, for example, schizophrenia, where scientists have theorized that there's a difference between prediction and actual reality, which and those differences might lead on to the delusions and hallucinations that these patients experience. So can your computer model help to somehow help us to understand more about these patients' conditions and maybe come up with a treatment?
That's a great question. The first thing I can say is that we have, in fact, done some of that. So a few years ago, we did a study of schizophrenia. And what we found is that when you look explicitly at how individuals with schizophrenia form predictions and how they evaluate their own predictions, what we found is that they often get things backwards. The things that are less likely to occur, we found that their brain activity showed stronger activity. In other words, they were predicting more. And the things that were more likely to occur, they seemed to predict less. Because those were sort of malfunctioning, that means that the outcome evaluation, that is the surprise that was detected, was not really consistent with reality. And so in that sense, we traced some of the dysfunction portion of the problem in schizophrenia back to a problem with learning how to accurately predict the world and what will be the consequences of your actions and of other people's actions. In essence, then, part of the problem is individuals with schizophrenia have great difficulty learning how the world works. and how they work within the world. We were able to see that at the neural level in a way that we can now account for with the same computational neural model. And we've also done other studies with drug addiction, looking at how our model can make sense of what's going on in the brains of individuals who are dependent on drugs. And what we find is, again, that there are systematic differences in how people with drug addiction predict the consequences of their actions, the risks, and also the rewards. And there are others. With obsessive compulsive disorder, for example, there seems to be an overprediction of outcomes, and especially negative outcomes, in a way that's not consistent with reality. And so subjectively, people experience this kind of anxiety, the obsessions or the compulsions, as if there was some bad consequence that was going to happen. And that leads to all sorts of behavior that's either unnecessary or at best inconsistent with the needs of the actual environment.
So your computational model has really taught us more about how humans behave and how we recognize particular errors that we might make in our own judgment. I don't know whether you've seen the film Her with Scarlett Johansson in it, where she's an operating software queen who has lots of relationships with men. She must have some intuition about how they value things and how they notice, reward, and recognize errors in order for her to communicate with them within this film. Do you think that your computational model might help to develop software that's similar to that?
Well, I think if you look at how the Her, I'm not sure whether to call it a Her or a computer, how that's depicted in the film, there's a huge range of cognitive processes. There's sort of processes related to empathy and social cognition and language. And in one sense, what we've done is to isolate a small part of cognition, a small but I think important one. Now, every model, whether I build it or someone else builds it, every model is by definition a simplification. So I'm certainly not going to claim that I have some model that's approaching something of the complexity of Her. But I think we have sorted out a piece of it. And I think with the kinds of things that we've developed and that other people have developed, I think it will be possible to put those pieces together into a larger functioning system. And I think down the road, it's going to be increasingly possible to build systems that appear more human-like. In fact, nowadays, if you make a phone call to a large corporation, you're likely to speak to a robot, essentially a computer. Even in my lifetime, those processes have gotten a whole lot better. They're getting better at recognizing speech, better at responding in a way that sounds more natural or human-like. You know, even recently, there's been talk of machines being able to pass the Turing test, and that is to fool people into thinking that the machines really are other people. And I think we are approaching that point.
That's all we have time for today, unfortunately. Thanks to Ray Dolan, Honica Dan-Alden and Joshua Brown. I'll be back again tomorrow to investigate the importance of sleep. So, have you ever been up all night partying and then crashed out completely the next day? That's your brain sleep bank getting out of the red and making up your lost sleep credit. We'll discover the sleep brain bank in fruit flies.
Except if we don't keep them awake all night partying, it's more sort of a Zero Dark 30, if you've seen that movie about torture in Iraq. It's more that approach, forced sleep deprivation, like the Secret Service would do.
Poor fruit flies, and they didn't even get the joy of a party to justify their sleep deprivation. Well, I'm off to enjoy Milan, but I'll be back again tomorrow to wake up and open my mind. My name is Hannah Critchlow, and this is a special Naked Neuroscience episode from the Federation of European Neurosciences 2014 Forum, reporting in Milan.